This is White Mountain Rescue Without a Trace, part 14, the penultimate episode. We are down Daniel Qualls this week, so Ellis, we have an excuse for him. And yeah, I'm very excited. We're taking a quick look at our first responders and recap what happened last session before we dive into some things. So Roderick Lopps, no conditions, but only got three more crowns available. Fun. Looking over at the Ranger Mike Waitley Hesters, stacked, completely stacked with conditions, and two crowns left. And Dallas Bartmoss, stacked with just one permanent condition, Agent of Prism, and respectable five crowns left. Not bad, not bad. So previously, we had begun the mountain rescue, getting to explore a bit of the life of our first responders prior to finding out that from Ellis that Hank McBride is actually still alive. He never died during the Night of Verdigris. He was taken to the other world and has been held there as a captive for some time after Mike stole a car belonging to Chief Rezeki and some agents of Prism. There was a chase where Mike ended up hiking it through the woods, encountered the Mountain King, the antlered figure that has been haunting him in this campaign since the beginning. And once, yeah, yes, and also crashed said car, absolutely. And once you had reconvened with the other first responders at the headquarters, you all had met up with Ellis and ascended a set of stairs that transitioned you all into the mountains of Verdigris, the first time that any of you have gone to the source directly, emerging in a series of ancient tunnels that Ellis seems to be living out of. You met his frogman friend Greeley, a mighty warrior, last of his kind. And we started addressing some of the questions on the table here, by the way, which this is a little different than usual CFB finale scenario procedure. Instead of just one question, I've structured it out into three. The first question was, what is the Mountain King's plan and how does it involve Hank? You all had used those clues to determine that there is sort of a god war that is actively going on between different dimensions. This Mountain King has actively been fighting against some other entities as well, and winning, it sounds like. And a current battle hinges a little bit on Hank because Hank had exposure to some of this other god. I believe it was the Drowned King was the one that was the seaweed crown one. And had exposure to that. And so the Mountain King has been kind of tapping Hank for some of those purposes involving in that war. You unlock the second question, which is how can the Fortress of Verdigris be breached? What is the Fortress of Verdigris? You haven't seen it yet, but that's what the next question is. Answering that will allow you to access the interior, and the third and final question will be yours. So I believe that's kind of the state of everything. We're gonna get real wild and crazy today. But before we do, I have a little side thing I'm gonna read off here. Imagine, if you will, the after you know the on the television show that is White Mountain Rescue Without a Trace, on after the recap section, there is like, cut to black. And then for those who've seen like What We Do in the Shadows, the original like short film, like the New Zealand documentary board kind of introduction of just like this old style intro animation, but with the Prism logo of the white scalene triangle that, cascades out into a series of colored bars, some funky synthy music just bah, 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 playing. And we see a very corporate looking man in a suit and tie, combed over hair, looking into the camera with a broad smile, and he's saying, "Hello and congratulations. If you're watching this presentation, that means you've been approved to begin training as an entroponaut for Prism, the Paranatural Reality Investigation Sector. What's the M stand for? That's classified." He winks at the camera. Our job at PRISM is to investigate, research, analyze, and categorize threat assessments for the myriad of paranatural realities discovered in our line of work. Your job as Entroponauts will be to explore these paranatural realities. But hold on, wait, what is a paranatural reality? In the mid-1800s, American scientist Atticus Whately proposed the idea of a proto-reality, an alternate dimension of near-total darkness and protoplasmic creation filled with powerful entities that really, really do not like us. This fragrant void, as Whately named it, is an astral realm that appears to underlie all of creation and has formed a crucial part of our understanding, or comparative lack thereof, of the powers at play in what we perceive to be existence. How do we make sense of all this? Well, optical theory was proposed in the early days of PRISM to provide a structure to this chaos. Imagine, if you will, a glass prism floating in a black void. I need you all to make sure that you're like imagining just like animations that are accompanying this and like, well, yeah, exactly.
It's very much dino DNA.
Dino is exactly
it. It is
very after school special meet the dino DNA presentation from Jurassic Park. Yeah. He says, the presenter says, yes. So imagine a glass prism floating in a black void. The black is the fragrant void and the prism is our perceived material plane. A power that we still do not understand is transmitting through the void, and where it intersects with the material plane, it gives birth to fractal realities. Like light through a prism, these paranatural realities are splinters of our world. So hold on. How do we explain the unexplainable? What sorts of tools or procedures could possibly assist us in dealing with these phenomena that do not adhere to our traditional sense of cohesive reality? I think one of our boys down in the labs can help you out with that one. Smiles at the camera, and then it cuts over to like a shot of an Asian, a young Asian man, maybe like mid to late 20s, in like a lab coat and like a shirt, holding like a coffee mug in front of him. He kind of like looks a little awkward, and he goes, are you rolling? Okay. Hi. Hello there. My name is Research Assistant Daniel Kwan. I've been asked to explain to you how PRISM utilizes QL theory. So QLs are a unit of measurement that we use to track abstraction away from the reality of a situation. Special thanks to Reddit user RedDye4. You'll never find that out, but it has proved pretty crucial in our work. So let's say that one QL is an abstraction away from the reality of a situation. So let's say, for example, he gestures to its side table and the camera does a little zoom in. Let's say that you ask me for this hamburger. So at one QL, if you ask me for the hamburger, I in turn give you a raccoon, right? At two QLs, if you ask me for the hamburger, but I don't actually exist and where I was originally standing, there's just a picture of a hamburger lying on the ground. This continues to ascend to increasing levels of Dolly Lynchian cascading reality failures. And at about 10 QLs, we approach what we refer to as a DeGoya class reality cohesion cascade, but probably going to be fine. Well, very rarely are we ever going to reach that situation. So yeah, hope that helps. Boom, you know, and then there's a little like a distortion in the video feed and seems to like skip to the end of the presentation as the researcher is standing in front of a crowd of other like lab assistants and a few like security experts and just PRISM staff. And he's like smiling and pointing at the camera and saying, "Good luck and Godspeed, Entroponauts." And then the whole crowd in unison chants, "We're counting on you." And then it cuts to black. So, where we left off, that's fine. I'll give you guys a moment to calm down.
Fucking, I just dropped the video game controller. I don't. What is happening?
I don't know.
So, when we left off, you all had transitioned into the Mountains of Verdigris. We see the three of you emerging from a crack in an immense cliff face under a surreal green sky, lightning rumbling and distant thunderheads. This immense cliff towers over the surrounding landscape as you're emerging out into this swamp, it looks like. There's a thick haze in the air, like really powerful humidity meeting like a greasy fog. There's a strange smell that vaguely reminds you of like peppermint and rotting meat. It's a strange
Oh,
combination, but it's
yeah.
very faint. But it does set off those kind of distant reptilian brain prey responses of like bad, bad, bad. There is a cluster of small wooden buildings on stilts, kind of built up against this cliff face, hidden amongst the dense foliage of this steamy swamp. And there are people here. You've had this explained to you by Ellis that there is a village hidden here in the other world of survivors like him. He doesn't exactly really get along with them all too well. He kind of mentioned that they're not really willing to help. They're kind of isolated, but he still like lives adjacent to them. He's not on the best terms with them, so that's why he's not presently with you. He's handling some other tasks while you guys like venture out and he's doing some preparation work. Do we think Greeley joined you guys, or is Greeley still with Hank?
Like, really is Hank's friend. So, like, if like Hank's going to, but oh wait, no. Greeley is Ellis's friend. So, like, if Ellis has gone off, like, I just think Greeley would go with,
Yeah, that's
unless we
fine.
needed a guide, like it we like that would probably be the only reason Greeley would come with us, is if Ellis was like, here's who's gonna guide you to the village, Greeley the Frogman. I defer to your judgment because I'm fine either way.
Yeah, let's bring Greeley along. I think
Yeah,
it
why
makes
not?
sense.
Why not?
Rozeki's
You need
with
a
us.
guide. Oh, that's right. Rozeki is here too.
Oh
Oh,
my God.
God.
I keep forgetting he's here.
Yeah, well, that's the point of Rozeki, is you need to forget that he's here. That was the whole, yeah, that's the whole reason I hired him. I think now, like, we're gonna come out from this crag, this astro crag, if you will. And I think Dallas is gonna stretch, and you're gonna hear like multiple pops, like glow st like a string of glow sticks all being cracked at once, and goes, "I think a break is in order, don't you?"
Pardon?
Well, if I may be so bold, Mike, you look like shit.
To be fair, it's been a very, very stressful day.
Exactly. And I think it's important for you to take like 5 minutes, maybe rest up and everything like that. What I'm going to do is, Greeley,
Really?
does this seem like a good place to set up like a base camp before an operating base? Interesting. Interesting. Yes. I think what we can find is something that's underneath, like an overhang that's not out of the way. Nothing too gaudy or anything like that. Just a place to set up a campfire and some like resting. So we have a place, a staging area, if you will, to go and venture forth and see if we can get our hands on Hank or any of these other people that are in trouble, and then figure out what exactly, well, where we are.
Really just points a finger at the village.
Bro, right down there.
Yeah.
Really?
What if they don't like us, Greeley? Fine, Greeley. But we will be making a base camp eventually, okay? You can't just because you feel like you can keep hopping forever and ever, doesn't mean that the others don't need time to like rest and recuperate. You and I are built different.
And Greeley just begins like to waddle down towards the village. Rozeki like leans over at you, Dallas, and kind of whispers to you as the group's walking, "Do you actually understand that thing, sir?"
No, but it's fun to play along. It's kind of like a Han Chewbacca kind of thing, don't you think?
Yes, sir. As I mentioned, there are people here in the village. Like, there seems to be a fair number of residents in this hidden swamp village. Let's paint the scene, everyone. The villagers all look human, but what odd mutations are starting to show?
God, I gotta get this one. They all have frog eyes.
Some are starting to have horn or antler-like protrusions growing out of their foreheads.
Just a slight bioluminescence. Just a smidge.
Just a
Just a
slight, just a very slight.
sea hair amount of bioluminescence.
And even on approach, several of them like stop whatever they're doing and like look at you. A few of them like move out of your way, but watch you as you enter. There's like suspicion, curiosity, maybe a slight degree of fear in some of their in their two large eyes as you're proceeding inward. And as you're like moving deeper into this hidden swamp village, there is a woman who seems to come out of one of the stilted buildings. And she says, "Welcome, newcomers." She's like walks up forward to meet you. There's something like slightly distantly familiar about her, like you, like not like you think you've met her before, but like she looks familiar in a way that it's like you have a face that resembles someone else. I've never met you, but you have like resemblance to somebody else kind of vibes. She said she looks to be like in her mid-40s, hard to tell. She's, I mean, with the manifesting mutations and sort of the grungier swamp living she seems to have manifested. You do spot that, like, in addition to like the salvaged, reclaimed clothing that's been made out of like, like parts of like, swamp vegetation and decoration and like cloth that's been like salvaged from somewhere. There are fragments of like normal looking clothes visible on some of these people. And hers, you see that she has a like a name tag that's pinned above her left breast that says, "Hi, my name is Clara," and there's like a logo for Swap and Save. Mike, how old is Mike again, actually?
Oh fuck, I forgot how old he is.
Like roughly, how old do you think he is?
Like I think I've said in the past, like he's been working at the Forest Ranger for like 20 years or
Mm-hmm.
so like early 40s.
Okay. Yeah, then you know that Swap and Save is was the name of the grocery store in Plymouth before it turned into a Hannaford's, kind of in the early 2000s. But she seems to, she's wearing like a employee Swap and Save badge, which looks like it's straight from your childhood in the 90s, or rather like your adulthood in the 90s. And she just says, "Welcome. Are you newly visited? Have you been brought here? Are you survivors in need of refuge? We welcome you if you bring peace."
We bring peace. We're not here. We come here as friends. Absolutely.
"Hail and well met. Are you the
That
leader of this village?"
one of three. "I am Clara Torini." That's where the familiarity kind of reaches, because Clara Torini shares the surname of the Forest Service person you helped out during the crash chopper. Yeah, Torini, the forester, looks like she it resembles this woman in some way.
Interesting. My name is Agent Dallas Bartmoss, and this is Mike Hesters and Roderick Lopps. They are with the U.S. Forest Services. I am with a organization named PRISM. We would love to meet with you and the two other leaders and discuss things that are important.
There's like a murmur through the crowd of onlooking villagers as like Clara like tilts her head slightly and says, I don't quite understand what you mean, but as long as you do not bring ill will to our safe haven, then enter and be welcome. Forest workers, you will find some like-minded company in our village. We have a few who, in their old lives, were indeed members of your National Forest Service. Like Darren over here, Darren, who's kind of like off to the side and kind of has like a faraway look, but is munching on what like seems to be some sort of like flat bread. There's like some people who in the village of like are taking like mashed up like vegetable paste and like some kind of doughy thing and are like spreading it flat against like rocks they have positioned over fires to create this kind of like simple flatbread. And he's just like kind of like chewing at it, watching with a faraway look. He does have like the ragged remnants of what may have once been an old 19 like 70s kind of Forest Service employee uniform, biting and tearing at a piece of bread as Clara kind of begins to like lead you deeper into the village. Mike and Roderick, kind of what are actually, let me ask you this. I want to ask all of you, I'll incorporate, how do you all feel right now? What are your vibes?
Dallas is just doing fantastic. This is, people have been living here. This is excellent news.
Mike
They
wants to hide under a rock, honestly speaking. Like he feels like he's being watched, he's being interrogated, even though no one's coming up to say anything to him. The fact that A, he has both the eye of the director and prey as conditions, I she's just like, he's so stressed.
Roderick kind of feels out of his depth, I would say. Fully out of his depth. Like, this is so weird. Like, he's trying to look at them just like, this is civilians we're talking to, just like any other rescue. But every time he starts to look a little deeper into the situation, he's like, oh God, oh geez.
Oh God, they all have frog eyes.
Yeah, like, he's really worried about misstepping here. And he has no idea how Dallas is, like, so confident.
Clara is speaking as she continues to lead you towards a building at the center of the village. She says, "My people noticed you emerging from the crack in the cliff face. Do you know Ellis?"
Yes.
"Did Ellis bring you here?"
Sorta, in a way.
So
Ellis
you,
is a guide of ours, yes.
yeah, he showed us the door.
her
How's
mouth
that?
forms kind of like a thin line, but she doesn't say anything for a minute as she continues to walk forward, eventually bringing you to this building, which seems to be kind of like the village's equivalent of like the town hall, like a council space. She pushes open the doors into a circular chamber. There's like a fire pit in the middle that crackles and provides heat, and there are like three prominent chairs on the other side of the fire. One of them, the middle one, is empty. The other two are occupied by a on the left side, like a man who looks like he's in his 50s, haggard, kind of like growing long beard, eyes that are slightly enlarged but mostly have clouded over a little bit, giving him kind of like the cataracts appearance. He has like hard lines in his face, like calluses on his hand. And then on the other side is what looks to be an 18-year-old girl, but her long hair is kind of like flat and hangs in some and kind of like sheerly in front of her face, down over her shoulders. She's a little pale, and she has very beautiful green eyes that don't seem to be frog mutating like some of the other villagers, but there's kind of this like otherworldliness about her that you can't quite put your fingers on immediately. As Clara enters and assumes the third empty seat, you stand before the village elders, it would seem. And it's Clara who says, "Here we may speak, and we will discern what your purpose is here, and if there is indeed cooperation that can be found between us. As I've already mentioned, I am Clara, and these are the other council leaders. This is Dawn, she gestures to the 18-year-old girl, who just, with a single slow nod, and she gestures to the other one, and Stephen. Stephen doesn't make a nod. It doesn't even like look in your direction. He's kind of staring off into space. But his ear is more tilted towards you. You actually get the idea that he is blind. He just clutches like a gnarled wooden staff. As Clara continues, she says, "We are not exactly on the best of terms with Ellis, not for any direct slight against us, but we find him to be reckless."
Indeed, but these are reckless times, and sometimes reckless people are needed. But I can assure you that we three are quite the opposite of that. We're well forward-thinking, well thought out. Volunteers, you would see. We understand the gravity of the situation in some ways. But we understand that our role in this is ultimately small, but we're trying to do the best we can. That's one of the main reasons I do what I do.
And what reasons would that be that brought you to these mountains?
Well, there is a force that is starting to make its way from here. Well, not starting to, but there's a force here that's making its way over to the other side, to the natural known world, the explored world. I'm working on different names for it. The differences between the two are staggering, and so trying to find branding for it is.
It's Dawn who speaks up with that kind of like far away otherworldly stare looking at you, Dallas. She says, "You speak of Carnonos, the antlered king."
You know him.
There's a mirthless chuckle that escapes Clara's lips. And she says, "There are none here who are not at least familiar with him, young man."
So do you? All right. Pardon my bluntness. Dallas is usually the person sort of negotiating stuff. Do you know where he lives? Do you know where he is? Where he keeps prisoners? That kind of thing.
Steven speaks up. He has a voice like gravel and motor oil, as he
Tom
says,
Waits.
very Tom Waitsy. Yeah. I
Yes.
can't quite do a Tom Waits voice, but I'm just giving you the impression of imagine he's played by Tom Waits. He just says, "The Fortress of Verdigris. We know of it, but it is a place of death. You would be wise to stay far away from it."
I'm not really in the business of being wise right now. It's more of a, like Dallas said, this is a, sometimes we have to do dangerous things and reckless things to get the job done.
"Indeed, you are Ellis's friends," Clara says, with a little bit of like, not bitterness, but a little bit of like sadness touching at her voice.
I do want to make it clear that understanding your position of how you live here and everything, not trying to upset the balance of what you have going on, we can be out of your hair if it's going to cause any problems for you and your ilk. We're just hoping to find a sense of direction, a way to go, or any other kind of handy help that you might have with Carnonos and his hunters.
Clara speaks, "If it is direction you are looking for, none here will guide you, but we will tell you what you'd like to hear. You will be solely responsible for making the journey. You must understand that we all have suffered the tortures of Carnonos in his dungeons, and we all have escaped and found peace in our new world. We will not exchange that peace for any form of danger. That is why we are here. Surely you have smelled and seen the haze present in our swamp domain. The vegetation, as it rots here, gives forth a miasma that is breathable by our kind, and indeed some others, she nods, acknowledging Greeley, but is toxic to the servants of the others. We are safe here. We have not quite weaponized it against them, nor do we feel the need to. They cannot assail us, and so we live in peace, free from their tyranny.
With the intent of doing the meddling move, because that hearing that we have not found a way to weaponize it yet or anything like that, Dallas is like, would you have any capabilities such as like glass jars or something, any ways to make things that could help you weaponize this to help defend yourselves?
We have no glass jars, but Darren, one of our villagers whom I passed on the way in, is quite skilled at weaving wicker baskets. We make use of them in abundance. But you can go ahead and roll the meddling or the information move, or the
Yeah,
search
oh,
move.
information
Yeah,
move.
the
The
search move is what it's called in this game.
search move
So
in this
many
game.
names for moves.
The CFB game
Every
needs
CFB
its.
has a new one. Yeah,
It's the
exactly.
investigation move, and come on in.
It sounds like you're doing this plus presence. I'm gonna say that you have disadvantage from Agent of Prism because they kind of are hyper aware of like your, even though if they don't know what Prism is, you're asking a lot of questions. You clearly have some sort of interest in like a way that might upset their balance of life. So it's kind of this like suspicion they have of you.
I would normally say having Chief Roseki off to my side to provide like backup of like, yeah, tell them what you know.
It's quite the opposite,
It's
yeah.
quite the opposite of that in this. Yeah, okay. Yeah, we'll just roll it straight up. I got a presence three,
Sure.
which you can still roll a five with presence three as I try to remind some of my players that are like, I have plus three, why am I rolling badly? It's like it's just plus three. The math maths. Perfect. Okay, that is a nine.
A nine. Clue with a complication. Sure. I'll give you your clue. Let me see what complications might be. As you're talking to them, what might they reveal? Actually, this follows quite well in the line of questioning about directions. They tell you, pointing out, through past where you came, and she kind of explains the lay of the land. Clara tells you that if you leave the village, through a certain place, she says, if you walk for some time, you will come across a clearing in the Forest of Bronze. There are strange markings in the trees. They are this realm's cardinal directions. Use those to orient yourselves. So that is your clue, a clearing in the woods with strange markings indicating direct cardinal directions. But she explains to you, and this is the not a capital C clue, this is just information for you to utilize, that beyond the swamp, there is where is this place called the Forest of Bronze, which is what she mentioned, and there is a road that goes through the Forest of Bronze. You'll know it when you see it. She doesn't really extrapolate further than that, but at one end of that road is the fortress. You will see it in the distance. It is the domain of Carnonos, and it is extremely dangerous. They make sure to like really underline how perilous, like the closer you get to the fortress, the worse things get. So that is in that direction, an impenetrable fortress atop sheer mountain cliffs on the other end of the Forest of Bronze. Very otherworldly. It's like we're in this is really like Conan meets Flash Gordon meets Never Ending Story. There's a lot of weird stuff happening here, and very Henson Dark Crystal vibes as well.
Yes, and Elden Ring. Like, it's
El
all
yeah,
this.
huge. Yeah. Just let that hodgepodge live in your creative brain
Yes.
space about like what you're getting into.
Fabulous.
Yeah. As for your complication, I'm gonna say, because you got a nine, I'll keep it a relatively simple complication, which is just to say that you're not gonna be able to do any clue finding by speaking with the villagers going forward. They're very, locked up. Like if you wanted to possibly find useful information around the village, that's one thing, but like you're not gonna have any luck speaking to people. I think that's the complication here, is that they're very tight-lipped about this kind of stuff, because they don't want the shit to come back their way should anything you do upset the balance. They're not hostile to you, but they're really not gonna, they have that kind of like, what's like one step below xenophobia, if it's like, yeah. So that's your complication.
Good.
Any
Excellent.
Mike, Roderick, anything that you want to role play in the scene with the council leaders, or shall we just like wrap up the scene and just say that they, finish telling you some basic information and they allow you to reside in the village for as long as you want before you leave? You are welcome here as long as you don't break their laws.
Want to do anything?
Not right now, if that makes
Great.
sense.
Then you finish meeting with the village council, and you are now in the village, just kind of out and about. You may do whatever you wish. I will remind everybody that there are vulnerable moves available in this in this scenario. Yeah, for Mike especially. So yeah, I guess I'll defer to you, Mike, with your stacked conditions. Do you want to do a vulnerable move?
Yes, please.
Who do you want to do it with?
Roderick, because I think Dallas is like probably off to tell him like his little goon about like stuff to like find around the village and whatnot, and just like
Wow,
super
you
sexy
couldn't
little
be
goon.
more so wrong. I think that's your bias speaking. But you know what? Dallas doesn't even want to speak to you, so go ahead and have your little role. Yeah, whose stress reliever is going to be indulging here? Did Mike bring along a thermos of coffee that he's sipping from?
I think it's more or less Mike wishes that he brought that. He's just so sad.
Well, you have, I mean, you need to be indulging the stress reliever to relieve the stress, Mike. Maybe, you know what? Maybe there's a coffee facsimile in the village. Because I doubt, unless B, you had an idea, I doubt Roderick can be studying for advanced certification here, unless you brought
Oh,
books along with you.
God, no, he did not. I
Then
was
I,
thinking they
then
probably
I,
had weird tea or some shit here.
yeah, I was about to say, like, there's like,
Wait. I lied. I forgot this something in my personal
oh.
items. I do have a coffee thermos.
Oh, there you go. So like you have some coffee, and like there are we I guess like this scene will have like focusing on Mike and Roderick like walking around the hidden swamp village, various people, and yeah, there's food, there's like some weird smells, some kind of very bitter smelling steeped drink that's clearly not coffee, but it smells powerfully caffeinated in ways that only coffee addicts can recognize. But you also have your thermos of black coffee. So yeah, I love this kind of let's paint the scene about the village again, why don't we? Because I have an abundance of prompts that never got to be used with the Vanish playbook. Let's see, where's the Hidden Swamp Village? Let's see.
This doesn't feel like a town, Roseki. This feels like a memory of a town, slowly fading away as
So,
dementia creeps in.
The villagers here, as we establish, are still mostly human. All of them survivors of being captured by the others, but for a variety of irrational reasons, they refuse to go back to the real world. They want to remain here. So walking around the village, let's paint the scene, everybody. What various like roles or occupations do you suspect the people here had in the real world that might be surprising about how they operate here in their village on their day-to-day life in the mountains of Erdigree?
I think one was a programmer, like an early programmer, the kind that had to feed the paper in. And that they've actually, like, now they're like a sort of a scavenger cook, like that they've figured out how to make some of this, like that weird bread, the make the not coffee. That's where they've ended up.
I think there was a sort of a librarian who has been sort of tasked as like a sort of a historian because like time here doesn't really pass by normally, so like moments need to be recorded, and because like reeds and like fabrics are pretty decently common around here, like I think that there's like this big sort of quilt with various colors been woven into it representing the history of this village.
There's a crudely carved wooden statue in the center of a village of a woman with a vacuum cleaner and a broom, and there's a child on a papoose on her front and one on her back, that signifies a town hero that was able to assess and clean up and kind of help build this whole community and get it started to what it is. Her name is Marielle, and that's all they have is just Marielle, our hero, on it. And you can pick and choose what you want from that, but you know.
Very good. Then you two, you have your vulnerable move, just role play.
Patrick.
Hey Mike, how you doing?
Not great.
Yeah, that tracks. That tracks. We're kind of in a fucked up swamp in another reality, so that's fair.
Do you think that they don't want to, that they, that's the reason why they don't really like Ellis is that Ellis wants to go back to our reality.
I think they're just scared of him. Honestly, I don't think they don't like him. I think they're scared of what he might do to upset this tenuous little balance they got. Same reason they're scared of us.
I think we really need to be careful out here, because even though that these people are they're peaceful, but I don't think they should know everything.
No, I agree with that. I think maybe we need to sort of keep our cards close to our chest a little bit on some stuff, but I also don't think that they're gonna pose much of a threat. He kind of glances over at some of them like, no. And
Just by numbers.
Mike, I don't think they're gonna like attack us or anything. I don't think they're gonna do anything to us. I assure you, like, they seem pretty chill.
I can see it in their eyes. They're watching our every move.
Yeah, because we're the newest people they've seen in probably 40 fucking years or however long time works here. Mike, it's okay. I know this shit's pretty crazy. But we're gonna be okay. Okay, it's a strong word. You are gonna be as okay as the rest of us, and no one's watching us that wasn't watching us out there. Okay? And if they are, I mean, fuck, what can we do about it?
I just need you to be on the same page as me, Broderick.
What page are you on, Mike?
I think I'm a whole chapter ahead on this one. Like before, when we were in our reality, it felt like my mind has been scrambled. Here, I feel like I'm already 2 steps of the head in the problem, and I'm just so very, very stressed because, like, my brain is in a place where I am currently in constant danger, and I can't tell from here what from my eyes and my ears and my nose and my mouth. My senses failed me.
Roderick puts a firm hand on Mike, the opposite shoulder of Mike, trying to be comforting. Of course we're in danger here, Mike. And I don't know what the hell we're in danger from. We were in danger over there. And if you're 2 chapters ahead of us, I would love for you to catch us up.
I think I understand what's going on here. I think because like I've not seen anything like this before. Yes, because I want to get as many clues as, with the least amount of risk as possible.
Okay, yeah. Is this one where I give you a clue?
This technically, because once per rescue may either find +1 clue and you have to describe it when it makes it slightly odd and it cannot answer the question by itself.
Okay, so you're doing that one. So yeah,
Yeah.
you can do that.
I think I understand why people aren't aging here. I understand why Ellis remains the same because like Ellis has some sort of like connection that keeps on going back, so that's why he stays human.
Okay.
Time travels backwards here.
What? That.
You see it in their eyes. Most of them have frog eyes.
Yeah, I did notice that. I thought that was a little
And
odd.
I've seen really like being very comforted around here. Like this was his home because it is his home. Because the people here aren't going to be turning into what really is.
Okay.
Because they are his ancestors. Because time travels backwards and Mike is having a freak out.
Okay, Mike. Mike, we are not going to stay here long enough to turn into frogs if that's what you're worried about. Okay? We're not going to do it. I don't think Dallas wants to either. So, we can leave whenever you need to.
You look over and you see Dallas is standing, talk to Rezeki, and a ball bounces over near Dallas. Dallas looks down and then picks it up and rolls it back over to this little frog-looking child. And the frog child just doesn't pick it up and runs off. And then Dallas just goes, oh. Just like, oh.
Yes, I'm specifically the wording that the clue is. Mike believes that the village is turning into frog people. This may not be canon or not. This is just
Just
what
Mike
Mike.
believes it. Yeah. That's a fun clue. This is what I believe. Interesting.
I'm not sure if I cleared any conditions.
Was about to say, keep the scene going if you
Yeah.
wanted to actually
Yeah.
clear a
Yeah.
condition.
Yeah. I suppose the only good thing is that Prism has no effect here. As much as Dallas says, like, he's an ancient of it and whatnot,
It
he
doesn't
has
matter.
no, he doesn't really have any authority over here.
No one has authority here. See, we're all good. The National Forest Service doesn't have authority. Prism doesn't have authority. Whoever the hell they are. And it, you know. So we're safe. We're safe from whatever that is. You know, you don't got to worry about digging holes in your yard or GPS tracking. I don't think GPS even works here. I mean, it's all of the concerns have just sort of focused in on a razor's edge, you
On
know?
life and death situation.
And there's something comforting about that because
Really, Roddy?
the probability of living in the world on a regular day, you know, that's chaos. Life and death, this kind of thing, one job, I know what we're supposed to be doing. So, and you know what we're supposed to be doing, and that there's something nice about that.
I guess. But I have another theory.
Oh.
I think this town, or this village that is holding the secret, I don't know what it is yet, but I know that they know more than they're letting on.
Oh, 100%. They don't want to tell us shit, but that's fine. Like,
And
we are strangers.
I think if I reveal some information to them, they would get so angry with me.
Yeah,
Because I think they have more enemies than just Ellis.
don't reveal. Mike, I would love it if you did
I
not do
am
that.
so stressed.
Yes, shh. It's okay.
I'm
Don't
gonna
reveal any.
cry.
Okay, you can cry. It's okay.
I'm going to cry.
Okay,
And
you
Mike
can.
starts crying.
There's a very large man here who is impressively mutated, who was like walking by and then just like stops in the street and like looks at you, Mike, with his like bulging eyes and said, "Did you just say Ellis? How's he doing? I've not seen him in a while."
He's doing good. Roderick's like patting Mike's back, like trying to like make him feel better. He's doing good, actually. He's doing
Good.
good.
Good. He doesn't come round these parts often, miss the old fellow. Tell him that he has to bring more of that Chef Boyardee from the real world.
Noted. I'll get that message back to him.
I have no inclination to go back, but SpaghettiOs stick in my brain, and it just is a comfort in these troubling times.
You know what? I understand. I think we both understand. You know, we'll get that message back. We'll see what we can do.
I'm Kenton.
Kenton, Roderick, Mike, and it looks over Dallas. Verzecki? I don't think I ever caught that cat's name.
So, when were you two grabbed?
Just now,
Ah,
honestly.
shit. Yeah, it's a bitch out there. Well, you'll settle in. It's not too bad here. It's better than the alternative.
What's the alternative?
Oh, going back to the real world.
Oh, I thought you meant there was like an alternative here that was worse.
No. Well, yes, pointing to like the edge of the village and the rest of the world beyond, but being like, it's like, I mean, you know. Look, I think there was a time when I missed home, you know. For a while, it was just constant fear, fighting for survival, trying not to be taken again, I mean. But then it all faded away bit by bit. Truth be told, it's not that I see anything wrong with the old world. I just don't really remember enough about it to feel the need to go back. You know what I mean?
Roderick is so worried that Mike is right. Like he's he's like, oh God. He's like nodding, like, yeah, I can see how that might
Yeah.
make it harder.
Others like Darren are just scared shitless, and don't get me wrong, the council, they do good work, but they're really, you know, hard hammer bias against the real world. Lots of us are just pretty, not lots of us, plenty of us are also like that. But like folks like me, a few of us, we're just like, we don't really care. It's just a thing, A lot of people are scared of going back. Some people think that this is better. Others, like myself, are just like, all right, hey, I don't have to pay taxes. I have a nice job. Well, not that I get income or pay, but it's, I the work I do is nice. And yeah. Excuse me. Frog in my throat.
You
Yeah.
make it sound pretty nice down here, honestly. You're kind of selling me on it.
It's not so bad once you get used to the smell.
Yeah, that sure is, you guys got a unique thing going on here. This
It
is,
changes.
it changes.
Yeah, we call it the seasons. Time doesn't really work here.
Yeah.
You meet the council, right? Yeah, you went in the council building?
Yeah,
Yeah.
we talked to them.
Now, Dawn, the 18-year-old
Yeah?
one? Yeah, she was grabbed in 78.
Gee, when were you grabbed?
Never ask a man his age.
Oh, all right, sorry.
It's all good. All good, all good. No worries. I don't hold a grudge. I mean, what's the use?
No, it's weird here, but
Sorry, I'm
appreciate.
talking your ear off.
Oh no, we appreciate you. We
I gotta take
appreciate
this
you.
bundle of sticks to the communal fire. So, hey, if I see you, I'll see you. So, hey, bye. See you around. He walks
All
away
right.
and just kind of like go leaves you two alone.
Love Kenton.
Let's jump over to Dallas. Yeah, I feel like if you you I feel like you may have cleared a condition there some way, Mike. Which one were you thinking?
I'm the eye
Makes
director.
sense. Makes sense. Yeah. No, like that. Did you also want to find an extra clue, or did you want to talk about, past more? I figure it's going to be clue, right? Because
Yeah,
you.
it's gonna be clue because we need them clues.
Sure. Let's see. Then I'll let you two. Yeah, you can have some kind of clue you noticed in the. It can either be like true to the move. It's like a flashback to something that happened, like another time that provides a clue now, or you can just be a clue that you found here. Let's jump over to Dallas, and then I think we'll take a break. Dallas, yeah, while that was all happening, you've been kind of mixing around with Rozeki. Rozeki, who's kind of got his eye on the place. What are you kind of like, what are you up to? You're muted.
Okay. Yeah, I think after that interaction with that child, Dallas is like, I'm over it. Just like is like keep an eye on the place. I'm gonna move to the outskirts. I wanna check out this gas a little bit more. But yeah, I'm gonna investigate the outskirts and like the gas and stuff like that. Just kind of see like what kind of defenses they have going on. Are they completely like relying on the gas? Like what kind of like technological advancements do they have in the village? Or is it literally just that one guy, Darren, who knows how to weave baskets? Is like their whole infrastructure is based on him and his baskets? Like that, like
I
try
love
and
that.
assess that.
We can do another search move. Why not? This one will be plus reason. It sounds like you're analyzing the defenses and kind of walking around the perimeter here. No disadvantage from Agent of Prism, though.
Got it. I will go ahead and do wet weather gear.
Makes
What do
sense.
I just?
Very soupy and swampy. Yep.
Yeah, just gonna put on the wet weather gear so I can get up close and personal without too much bullshit.
Love that.
Booyah, baby! Eat shit, Jason Schwartzman. That's an 11 minus one, so it's a 10.
Flat 10, you just get a clue, man, right on. Yeah, here I'll give you a clue. Let's see what we got here.
Also, apologies, Jason Schwartzman. I
Yeah, I
don't
was about to say,
know.
what did Jason Schwartzman do
It's,
to you?
I don't know. I felt like a very Jason Schwartzman kind of thing. I imagine Jason Schwartzman or a Jason Schwartzman type character plays Dallas in my brain. Like a non-binary twink Jason Schwartzman. I mean, Jason Schwartzman's already twinkish enough, but Should I talk about the nephew of Francis Ford Coppola? Like,
anyway, well, your lowercase c clue, just the info in general. It seems that the village's defenses are entirely reliant on just the fact that this the gas that's released by the vegetation that rots in the swamp is toxic to them. Like they don't maybe they're maybe like a half submerged, like wood analog sharpened like pole here and there, but there's not like a fence. There's not they seem to really just be relying on the fact that this is like tucked into like a nook of this swamp and the others can't really get here anyway. And it's probably hidden deep in the swamps that way, but there are no external fortifications. You're not really sure if your eyes can necessarily be trusted on this because you're breathing in a lot of swamp gas that you don't know what it does. But as you're kind of on the periphery or the edge of town examining things, there's like in the distant haze of the swamp, you see like a light for a moment. And in the shifting, obscuring, what's the word I'm looking for here? That's not the word haze. Like through
Fog,
the
mist.
like through like kind of like the lowered visibility of this like of where like the haze kind of meets like a fog, you see a silhouette, or you think you see a silhouette in the distance of a tall figure, watching from a distance, and the light you noticed is this circlet of green flame that's emblazoned above her brow. You can tell that it's like a female figure. You can't really discern any facial features and seems to be completely featureless, but just in this like clearing, shifting haze for a moment, you see this silhouette of this figure watching from a distance before the haze obscures her once more and she's gone. So I will, in a flowing white dress, I'll post that clue here.
Dallas just does like a high and then like fades away and goes, huh?
When you turn around, there's a man right behind you. It's not Rezeki. Rezeki's like is like like a few meters away, also analyzing. This is Darren from the village. He's just like, "Hi,
Huh, Cracker Jacks.
I saw you in the village. I saw you. You're a newcomer.
Yes, Dallas Bart Moss with Bart Moss Solutions.
You're
Pleasure to
too
meet
close
you.
to the edge. You're too close to the edge. What if they see you?
Okay.
What if they find you?"
Okay. Do I need to hide?
Well, you're already hiding if you're on the other side of the haze.
Okay, I'm not gonna go through the haze. It's
You
fine
came out of
until we
Dallas's
get
crack.
Dallas's
No, sorry, not
crack?
Dallas's, Ellis's crack. He said, "You came out of
Ellis's.
Ellis's crack."
Yes, yeah. We know about the crack. We are trying to figure out a way so that we can help you.
Help? Help? No. You can't help. You'll mess things up. You can't help. This is safe. We're secure. You don't want to get their ire, man.
Okay. Do you not want like Wi-Fi or anything?
The hell is Wi-Fi? You speaking
Like,
in tongues, man?
imagine being able to watch a movie and not going to the movie theater.
That's crazy talk. That's crazy talk. You're starting to sound like it. You're starting to sound a little bit like Ellis.
Dallas is like it. Just realizes all the interactions with Ellis and goes, I get it. I get how Ellis turned into how Ellis turned into. I understand now. Okay. Well, why don't you tell me more about like Darren, right? Darren, you weave baskets.
Yeah, a weave basket. It's good for the mind. Distracts me from the horrors.
The horrors. Okay. Do you have a therapist here, Darren?
I sometimes talk to the baskets, and sometimes I speak with Clara, and Clara is a very good listener. I
Okay.
was never really into that, hippie mumbo jumbo Freud stuff, but it's good to have someone to listen to you some time to time if you've
Oh, Darren. Yes. No, I through Ellis's crack, we have far surpassed the elementary mind sciences of Sigmund Freud. I'm gonna tell you, not everything is a penis.
I think that is the perfect line to go to break on. Perfect line to go to break on. Let's take 10 and we'll come back and continue this odyssey into verdigris. All right. So, before we move on, I believe Chaotic wanted to do another vulnerable scene, this time with Dallas, if Wes is down with that. The village is, insofar, the only safe location for sure in the Mountains of Verdigris to do these in. So might be wise to squeeze an extra one in for sure. Wes, I assume you're good with
Actually, Alex, no, I'm not okay with
that. Okay.
it.
Then
And
fuck
here's
you,
what, no,
chaotic. Let's go on. Yeah.
I am
All
okay
right,
with
cool.
it. Yeah,
Yeah,
let's do
awesome.
it.
Whose stress reliever are we indulging in? Is it going to be Dallas's this time, or is Mike still chugging coffee?
I think we can talk about the joy of volunteering, right?
Philanthropic work and all that. Yeah,
Philanthropic
okay.
work and
Where
everything.
is this vulnerable scene going to happen then? Where do we set? Let's set the scene here. Where is it?
I think there's a collection outcropping of rocks towards the edge of town that kind of like overlooks a plenty of it, not enough, but like plenty of it. It's not a big village, so it's like look at all this wonder. But yeah, Dallas is just sitting there.
Dallas and Greeley are doing some like equipment gathering. Not Dallas, sorry, Roderick and Greeley are doing gathering up supplies and stuff, yeah.
Dallas.
Mike Hester's Waitley.
I don't know if people would like to hear that around here.
Why do you think that?
I don't know. It just seems a little bit odd. And to just give context, I still owe the clue from the previous vulnerable scene. And I think this clue technically was not found by Mike. I think it probably was either found by Dallas or Roderick, just when we were leaving the sort of council members' chambers. I think it was just like a sort of a hushed sort of conversation between them, of them just being glad, oh, it was just Ellis that these people came from instead of that Waitley. So.
Damn. Okay. Damn. Damn. Okay. You really think everybody's out to get you, don't you?
And like you've literally were following my every movement.
Not to get you.
It makes people paranoid when people follow each other.
Mike, I don't think I made you paranoid. I think there's something going on inside your brain chemistry that's making you paranoid. You've experienced multiple traumatic events that are affecting you. You know that, right?
Yes, and I'm not in a ball of heap. I'm still doing stuff out in the world.
Maybe you need to be in a ball of heap. Let me tell you. When I was rebuilding farms and houses in the middle of Oklahoma after terrible tornadoes cut through, I kept feeling guilty because I felt like I was holding everybody back. I would get mad at myself and I would punish myself in ways. I wouldn't let myself enjoy the food I was eating. I wouldn't let myself shower. I wouldn't let myself, experience comforts that I was used to out of guilt of what these people were dealing with and how I wasn't doing enough to help them. And then I, after about 4 days, a friend or an associate pulled me aside and said, "Dallas, you smell like shit. You look like shit. You haven't eaten anything, and I can hear your stomach grumbling from over here. It all looks like shit." And I said, "Well, how dare you? I'm doing my best, especially with all these people who are suffering. I can't focus on all of these things." And he said, "What's the point of you breaking your back and killing yourself over your guilt towards these people not having the things that you have when you could just conserve your energy enjoy the things that you have in life, and then also help them out. It's airplane. It's the airplane etiquette. The little masks go down. You're all going to die, but you put yours on first before you put on somebody else's next to you, because if you don't do that, then you're not going to be able to help them, and then you're just two people plummeting into the air. You know, now, kind of a bad example, because you're all going to die if an airplane crashes. Well, not always. Sometimes you survive, but you know, I'm not able to help people through volunteering if I kill myself over and over and over again. And the same goes for you. You're killing yourself because you're jumping at every shadow and every nook and cranny and bump of the night instead of assessing and moving forward and taking a bath, for God's sakes. Were you taking a military shower? Is it a rag? A wash rag?
Well, to be fair, stuff was crawling out of the tub, so
Then move.
I
Call your landlord.
cannot.
You're a grown man, Mike Hesters, Waitley. You pay rent. Tell your landlord to fix it or you're going to move. That is a breach of your lease. Stuff crawling out of your bathtub. What are you, a Ninja Turtle?
Dallas, you have more money than God. You have the luxury of being able to move. I do not. I am
Then ask for a
barely.
handout. What are you, too good for help? You jag off? I wasn't keeping tabs on you because I'm like, ooh, Mike Hester's. Ooh, there's something creepy going on, Mike Hester's. I have to keep an eye on him. Your name just kept on popping up. And then Rozeki handed me a file folder that had your name on it. And guess what? Your name wasn't your name. So I sent you the information. I kind of feel guilty. I felt like I should have never told you these things.
You probably shouldn't, because like all these things started happening after you sent me that file.
Yeah, because, well, you should know your family history.
But is it really family if I've never met these people?
It's not family, but it's legacy.
I guess.
You don't know what the Waitley name means, right? Hell, I didn't know what the Waitley main name meant about a month ago, but I've been doing extensive research. You know, there's a collection of videotapes that Prism has?
Always with being watching and learning things.
What's wrong with watching and learning things?
I think my family's cursed. That anytime we ever watch or learn things that are outside of the realm of normalcy, we are sent through a downward spiral of doom and destruction. Dallas, I'm not going to go back to the real world. I don't think I can go back to the real world. At best, I'm going to live out my days here at work.
Here with Darren weaving baskets. At least let me build a working water source for you all or something. Like, I was just thinking it. Like, look at that. Like, there, you could have a well right over there. There could be a filtration system that keeps all the gas away from it and kind of accumulates it and push it out so it forms like some kind of like mist wall. So you're not having to put up actual barricades, you're not having to disrupt the ecosystem of the place, but you're cleaning out the air for the people here and you're pushing it towards so it keeps all the bad stuff out. Maybe some filtrations, some gas mask filtration units, rudimentary crossbows and things to help people hunt for game.
That's
Don't tell me you're going to try to last samurai this thing or dances with wolves it, though. You're like, I'm Mike Hester's Waitley, and I don't belong in the real world, so I'm going to come over to this place, and they're going to teach me their ways, and then I'm going to help them succeed in a glorious battle where most of them die, but I got the girl at the end.
No.
That's just Avatar.
Yes, that's dumb shit. This is more or less,
Pocahontas. Dances with Wolves.
yes.
Last Samurai.
Yes.
White savior bullshit.
I am being hunted for sport. And
We
I
all are. We've seen the men with the golden antlers and they're hunting the boars and stuff like that. Mike, you're going through a lot. It's okay to take a break, but you have to realize you're not going through it alone. You've got me. You've got Roddy. You got Rusecki. Seki walks by. Hey. Just.
I think this is the first time we had a goddamn reasonable conversation.
And you're mad about it.
It's better than I've been in the past couple weeks.
Good. Let's keep, if you want to keep having these conversations, we can. But please think before you settle for a place that doesn't have a toilet.
Okay.
You can be crazy, but at least you'll be crazy with a bidet.
I think that's good to cut it there.
Not everything's a penis, and it's better to be crazy with a bidet. Dallas
Yes.
Bart Moss ways, the collective wisdom of Dallas Bart Moss.
I'm crazy, but at least I'm crazy with a bidet.
Very good. You may
This
clear
is something
prey.
I've said to myself multiple times when I'm insane and nobody understands me and everybody hates
Oh
me.
my
And I'm like,
God.
wait, I'm crazy, but at least I live in a time period where I have a bidet. Like,
You may clear prey, Mike and Dallas. You get to decide a clue for this scenario. I'll let you think on that. So Roderick and Greeley ground scrounge up some additional supplies that they can find around the village. You all stock up and begin to head out of the village. Last chance for any interactions, if anyone had anything they wanted to do with any of the villagers. Otherwise, you can set off into the swamps and the forest of bronze beyond.
I just want to make a note that Roderick is also pretending that he understands what Greeley's saying.
Really?
Yeah, man.
Really?
Yeah, you know what? That was a good idea back there, I have to say. It was I'll tell Dallas.
All right.
Rather making him feel very comfortable or just causing irreparable damage
Yeah.
one of the two.
It's extremely hard to tell if Frogman's getting pissed off.
He hasn't stabbed us yet, so I think we're good.
Nards.
Frogman got nards. You leave the hidden village through the directions given to you by the council, and after a arduous hike through the reeking swampland, the terrain begins to shift. Ever present are the strange alien skies of green clouds, distant lightning that illuminate strange masses of rock or other large gargantuan shapes that just drift seemingly far away from wherever you are, until the terrain changes to what people call the Forest of Bronze. You can see why it's called a forest, but it's not really a forest. There are these twisted bronze structures that vaguely resemble trees, limbs, roots, and trunks, but there are no leaves on any of their boughs. Small bronze underbrush and vines with brittle metallic leaves, and indeed a road of black glass that leads to the Fortress of Verdigris, a tall, spindly castle on a mountain cliff with no visible entrances except for large arched windows in the high towers. Lightning in the distant background, the mountain itself looming over the forest. It seems both miles away and imminently close. Let's paint the scene. What alien flora, strange fauna, or bizarre phenomena do you witness while navigating the otherworldly forest?
aluminum style leaves on trees, like trees with metal leaves and things like that growing and just rustling. And it sounds like y'all ever have that uncle that's got a barn or a shed in the back of their house that has various rusty tools just hanging up and they kind of just clink and clatter into each other? That's what it sounds like.
I think amongst like these trees, like swinging from branch to branch, is even more plants, quote unquote. They're about I think about 8 feet tall, with very long sort of limbs, holding with each branch swinging, and like they have like this sort of very see-through like bulb top where it looks like you can capture people in.
Whoa. I think that it's still swampy, right? There's this, it's still kind of
You're coming out of the swamp and like it's
okay.
entering this new terrain of this place, yeah.
Okay, so I think that on the ground you see the shimmer just from the light of webs covering holes and what looks like a massive trap door spider's burrow.
Terrifying. Yeah, you are all hiking through the Forest of Bronze, the Fortress of Verdigris in the distance. How are you navigating? Like I said, there's that road of black glass and a lot of terrain and a lot of weird stuff. Are you following the road or are you staying off of it? Like, kind of paint the picture here for like how we find our first responders moving through this alien forest.
I mean, if Roderick had his ruthers, they would be following the road the same way you follow a river, like off to the side, not on it. Because on it just feels so vulnerable. It feels like we're just like, hey, we're over here. Come get us, big predator things. So that's his vote. I don't know what everyone else would want to do.
You're muted.
Right off the beaten path. Yeah, I think Dallas is allowing Rezeki to do like Overwatch. And Dallas has like the crossbow out and is just like keeping eyes off to the side and everything.
Anything distinct from Mike, or is he just following along?
Just following
Very good.
along. It's just like thinking about what Dallas has told him.
Time passes, a strange, otherworldly sensation, not quite cohesive to your understanding of actual time passing. It's like a fugue state, but also being completely lucid for it. Hard to explain, very disorienting, especially as you grow ever closer to where the thunderheads swell and the fortress looms on the mountain. A noise from up ahead. Patrol of the others. You hear movement and noise and chatter, hard to say, coming in this rough direction. Are not the hunters that you experienced last time, but others nonetheless. Some of them look like the wood devils, kitted out with armor and ornamental vestments like high priests carrying a palanquin, atop of which is a creature, an alien horror that just undulates and sits, and from at least seven different mouths, pipes at a flute that hurts your brain. They're coming this way. What do you all do?
I imagine that Verzeki and I are on the same page where there is just immediately like a gesture to be quiet as fuck and fall back a little bit, find a place, get behind something. That's a very Lord of the Rings hiding from the wraiths kind of vibe.
Dallas, are you also going to hide?
Yeah.
Okay. Dallas and Roderick, I need you to give me the risky move. Roderick, because you're not Roderick, sorry, Mike, because you're obsessed with the mountain, that discordant, strange, piping, flute-like sound that whistles shrill through the bronze trees, echoing and reverberating off of them with a tangible, resonant sound. It is, to carry B's metaphor, it's like Frodo's trance when the Ringwraiths grow near with the ring,
Oh
present
no.
of just like a calling. It's gonna be the dangerous move from you. What are you afraid of happening here?
I set up myself for failure, but because like there is like these stalkers out in the woods, but I don't think that's where the main danger is. I think from earlier when I was describing that these like huge mungus plant creatures up in the trees. I think they're also going to just take me away.
Oh, yeah, it's worse than that. This clarion call that is being patrolled through the woods is going to reach deep into the marrow of your bones and fundamentally reverberate against part of yourselves. And Mike Whateley will be forever inhumanly altered by the change that comes. Dallas and Roderick, what are you two afraid of? It sounds like getting caught, but I'd like to hear from you specifically if there's any specific thoughts you had on that.
Losing an advantageous position is what Dallas, it's not so much getting caught, but it's what happens if we do get caught and one of these fuckers gets away.
Gotcha. And what about Roderick?
I think it's very similar. He's worried about the loss of an advantageous position, but he's also worried about someone else getting captured and being used as like ransom, like a hostage type
Gotcha.
situation.
You two can roll with either vitality or composure, depending on your approach of either, hardcore sprinting or just ducking low and being quiet for cover. Mike, you are going to roll with sensitivity at disadvantage from Obsessed with the Mountain.
Wow.
Yes.
I have to fight for my life.
Yes, you got like five clues for free, so I am now officially swinging the karmic tether ball back in your direction.
Gotta pay the price. Pay the piper.
Since I did mention earlier that I was still like thinking about my conversation with Dallas and Roderick, I'm going to mark my harder than rock face coffee thermos because like I need stuff something to ground me to what's real.
Nothing more grounding than grounds. All right, you can roll with a flat. All right, we got a 9 from Dallas, not bad. We got an 8. Very good from Roderick. Cool.
As I lose my dice. Fuck me, apparently that's a 6.
Dallas and Roderick and Rezeki and Greeley leap further into the underbrush, as you could call it, moving to hide at the passing of this procession. You freeze. You find yourself unable to move. Those shrill, discordant flutes, the footsteps on the glass road like a distant marching drum. And you actually find yourself stepping onto the road, like walking into the middle of the road. Tugged, wanting to, against your own better judgment, be there to approach the herald as it's brought down the road. And as you step into the road, they stop about 100 feet off, staring at you. The ornamented wood devil priests hold their arms up in a stance that I'm going to call is like the antler, kind of like stance like that. They pose their arms like that. Very creepy. And the undulating mass on the palanquin never stops playing, and you begin to walk towards them. The reverberations of this sound is, it's the resonance between worlds, Mike. It's the sound that travels beneath the very spaces in existence. It is the underlying fabric of creation that is being rattled presently, and you feel it surging within you. As Mike Whateley approaches the palanquin, we see that his skin begins to turn slightly pale, jaundiced, but not yellow. There's a slight greenish tinge, like sickliness, that touches at his veins, going a little purple and black in some places, eyes starting to cloud over. You have visions of Karnonos, the fortress, and a myriad of other impossible alien worlds that are shattering your mind in a calm, quiet death of the soul. One of the priests just reaches out to you, and a bulb plant snakes down, grabs you in the bulb, and begins to arc its way through the trees towards the fortress. Mike Whateley, I will tell you this right now. That is character death. That is character retirement. Like your transformation.
Okay.
Bumping that up, I'll tell you this right now. I'm gonna go ahead and tell you a complication right now because again, I'm kind of going hard here. You
I
are not
still
going to
can't.
have the, awful transformation to happen to you, right? Like that's a thing, but like you're going to get captured and you're going to get separated and we're going to have to resolve that later.
Okay, that's
Yeah.
fine. I will bump it up. Last crown time almost.
Do you want to do that now or do you want to wait?
God, this is just really, really funny. My crown, my last crown of the forest, narrate a scene a few weeks ago showing a private side of you the rest of the team never gets to see. I think with all of like the sort of manic like sort of spiral that Mike has gone on, I think he's been very keen on taking notes, where Roderick has seen a bit and Dallas to a certain extent, and I think like he effectively has gotten like his normal cell phone where he knows like, oh, this has been bugged. I need to do something to like let the people I care about in my life still get in contact with me, and that I like have emergency procedures because I could die and no one would know, unless they were find a body or know what anything happened. So like he's gotten like sort of like a bunch of recording equipment to like bug himself. Effectively, it's like that people will know that he was here, that he could be remembered, and that he could still talk to people without having to worry about like government conspiracies, without all of this without about Prism. And he got effectively a voice machine, like a voicemail machine. Like one of those like old 1980s style where you like have like actual video like audio tapes you plug in and stuff. And I think that like Mike, while we see him like been digging holes for like the past couple times, we see like the machine go off as like he misses a call from inside the house like on a literal landline, and just says, we hear a boop. We say, Mike, I just got your letter in the mail. Oh, I don't understand what's going on. Please call me. You haven't called me in weeks. Mike, I know this is all very surprising to me. I know that you were adopted with me. I know That's we had a bit of falling out. So, and I know I shouldn't have yelled at you the last time we talked. And for that, I'm sorry. But this, Mike, call me before I have to send somebody after you, because I will send somebody after you. You know that. And I'd rather not have a repeat of last time. And the call just ends there.
Instead, we see you fighting off these strange sensations, fighting back against the urge to step out into the road, your mind still assailed by flickers of landscapes and vistas you cannot possibly begin to comprehend. Your thoughts feel too large for your skull to contain. The air around you tastes of like acetane and copper, and it's just a fight, a push against that to ground yourself, to not slip too far. And you don't succumb, you don't begin to change. But in your internal fight, the focus to remain who you are and where you came from, you miss the plant-like bulb creature that slithers down overhead, bends over to snap you up in its translucent bulb, and begin to swing you overhead down the road towards the fortress. The procession watches you go overhead, stopping on their advance. One of the wood devil priests brings a whistle, like a long bone whistle, up to its face. It doesn't have features that you can really discern, but it emits a low noise that then begins to reverberate through the bone needle whistle thing, echoing off of the trees. This is the complication for Dallas and Roderick, is that you guys dipped off to the side, you hid successfully and got off the road before being noticed. But with one human being captured, they blow the whistle and you hear the sounds of animals that are not dogs that are now hunting through the forest of bronze in search of other possible prey. And I think we'll cut there. I think that'll be the end of session dramatically as these not dogs bark and begin to sniff out the interlopers. Let's do our end of session questions, everybody, and then we can go to stars and wishes. Bit shorter session today, but we will have an action-packed finale. Roderick, did you talk about one of your many certifications? Did you share your career goals?
No, I don't think I did any of that this session.
Good job. I'm going to be nice and give you a point of experience so you can just advance because you're one away from advancing. You
Oh, thank
deserve the
you.
advance before the finale,
You're so
essentially.
nice.
Yeah, you can take an advance for free. Mike, did you impress the others with your wilderness skills?
I think the opposite sort of happened. I think everyone's really concerned about Mike.
Yeah, did you share your insight about the forest? In a way, you did. Of
Yeah.
like a maddening rambles. I'll give it to you. I'll give it to you. And Dallas, did you explain it again why you love volunteering? Yes, you did. And did you impress the others with any of your wilderness skills?
Yes. I
There
think
you go.
you pressed Mike.
That's two.
It's two.
Very good.
Can I get a level up before the end of, or can I get a level up at the end of our game next session?
Right? Ain't that the way of just like,
Ain't that just the
ain't that
way?
just the way? Level up for the finale. Yeah.
Let me bump that reason from a negative one to a zero. Maybe let this all be a learning experience for Dallas.
Dallas gets a spin-off,
Yep.
obviously. This is the
Obviously.
prequel for Dallas.
Dallas went to Jupiter and, in fact, did not get stupider.
You know, actually, I think we this might I'll ask you guys, but before we go to stars and wishes, do you want to actually answer that second question now, or do you want to wait for Daniel next week?
I think we could wait for him. I'm down with either. I'm
Yeah.
not.
Yeah, because I think it'll be more fun if we
Have
answered
everyone. Yeah.
all together and then like have it
Yeah.
on our mind because like it'll be a little bit funky if like we
Yeah,
answer this and then we forget to file it next week.
fair
Yeah.
enough. So then
I will.
next, then we will start the next session with answering how to get inside the fortress very cinematically correct. As now Mike has been captured, and Dallas and Roderick are being hounded. No pun intended. That's a lie. It was absolutely intended. Great. Well, let's go to Stars and Wishes. Whoever would like to go first, be my guest.
I'll do
I
it.
want to give.
Oh, go ahead.
Okay, I just want to give a star to Chaotic for that for both vulnerable scenes. I think you got tough and soft love from both of your people, which was great. I think that's just fantastic. One second, sorry. Okay. So on top of that, I think that also I want to give a big old Texas-sized shout out to B-Nar. Roderick is necessary. Roderick is it, without Roderick, I think we would have all been dead in a ditch someplace. I don't think that vulnerable move between. If this was like a story and there was no mechanical benefit between vulnerable, I don't think that vulnerable scene between Mike and Dallas would have happened without Roderick being there. So I just think that's really cool. Wow, I just made a suction cup. Alex, Kenton is fantastic. The whole idea of like this abandoned swamp village that just has like a cashier from the 1980s, a blind man and an 18-year-old girl are the village elders of this place. Gold, all of it. I also like the idea where it's like we make do, you know, everything we fill up.
Credit is due to Daniel. He's the one who decided the identities and like details about the council. But
That's
yeah, so yeah.
fantastic. That's fantastic stuff. Well, you're weaving it and you're presenting it in a really fun and a great way. The idea that Darren just does basket weaving, and then the conversation with Darren towards the end of like all this stuff, just perfect sets up for me to get my little zingers in there. And you know how much I love my zingers, and so I gotta get my zingers in. And then chaotic, fantastic. Just scenes. And then all told, all of y'all are fantastic and great. And that's where I'm at. And that's the bottom line, because Stone Cold said so.
Oh my God. I mean, echoing all of that, absolutely. This was fabulous. Everyone's fabulous. I'm obsessed with the village, the concept. Alex, I really love your voices. They're all so, like, it's so easy to differentiate each NPC. Like, you don't even have, like, once I know this person and you speak as them, you don't have to reintroduce who they are when you start talking. And I just have to say, that's very impressive as a keeper. And I really, really love it. And I love the frog noises you can do. That is delightful. It's delicious. And just the vivid descriptions, the cinema, it's so, I love the pacing. I'm so excited for this. Oh my gosh. Like, and I love Mike's very appropriate descent. Like, I like that you could do the vulnerable moves and clear those conditions and kind of pull back a little, but you never lost that character development while still maintaining that. Like you balanced it quite well, and I really, really loved it. And I love how many risks you take. I love you and Alex's sort of like always going hard with Mike's character. I'm very excited about that. I think that's delightful. And I loved your flashback. What? Who's that? Like, who's on the phone? I love that. Just sleep. I love it. I love flashbacks. And oh my gosh, Wes, I love Dallas. Dallas is delightful. They are so like every I really love the dynamic of this player group. Like, I think that each character has been like really integral to the machine of this game running well. And Dallas is such a like a plot mover, and like I love their charisma. Absolutely delightful. always like on point. The fact that you were like, we could like, get some running water in here. What about some Wi-Fi? How about we take a break? And like just the movie references as a constant just delights me so much. I just absolutely love it. I'm really interested to see how they handle this sort of like big finale thing. Like, it's very exciting. So yes, and props to Daniel. I know he's not here. This is such a cool setting. Holy shit. This is such a cool setting.
Yeah, sort of an insight to that particular crown. That sort of phone call, it was representative of like where I initially started Mike's character at, with having this mysterious relationship from someone out of town that I really didn't have a good chance to like incorporate, but I'm glad I got to incorporate this session. I'm very pleased with how I personally how I pl played Mike this session with like just like getting clues. Like I'm a lean fighting machine, and Alex will give me as good as I give it to him. So I'm very glad that even though like I did get a mix that I am getting kidnapped, I just love that. I'm hoping to see Hank next time. So this might be not only a break into the castle, but a break out of the castle. So let's see how this all goes. Also a star for like these little weird village characters of just like, oh, I really miss Chef Boyardee, or sometimes I talk to the baskets. So like everybody has like a similar vibe to Mike this session, and I'm just like, oh wow, Mike's not the weirdest person here. And star for
Not even Ellis. Ellis isn't even the word weirdest person here. It's like, oh, Ellis is actually pretty normal.
and a star for Dallas for really showing their humanity this session, like that. Like I think like Mike, I think for the first time in a very long time saw you, which is just very interesting. And I really agree that without Roderick that I don't think that would have happened. So yeah, I just oh so good. Also star for that opening monologue, Alex. Oh my God, I l lost it. Oh, that's so good.
I could hear the control FBC boom boom boom, just like that little tone
Yes,
or like the
that's what I was
NBC.
thinking of. Yeah,
Oh, it's so
perfect.
good. It was so also yeah. Star Daniel Kwan.
Daniel Kwan.
Yeah,
Daniel Kwan.
oh my God,
I
yes.
can't wait to tell
Oh.
Meg who wrote the Deepblade Lurker that Daniel Kwan showed up as a late 20-year-old research assistant to Prism.
Absolutely delicious. Yes, I forgot to mention that intro was killer.
Oh, all done. Chaotic. All right, cool. Yeah, no, this was a lot of fun. I really enjoyed getting to see how everyone interacted for a moment, breathing room inside the Swamp Village, and also just interact with their first foray into Mountains of Verdigris. I really enjoyed both of Mike's vulnerable scenes, especially with Roderick. But then the interaction between Dallas and Mike was hilarious. I love that so much. Of just like it's like, I feel better. Well, why are you angry about it? It was really funny. It seems like finally Dallas not necessarily talked sense into Mike, but is like Dallas's perspective seems like it's finally beginning to at least make some sense to Mike on some level of just being like, it's like it's no longer just this outer threatening, ominous thing. It's like, okay, well, you've explained your perspective, and I get it, and I don't like that I get it. Like, it's whatever. Bah. That was great. Great clues that you were inventing there, chaotic apps. I mean, like, you knew that it's like I am coming out swinging with every clue finding mechanic I can that does not involve a roll. So props to you. I mean, you ended this with like six clues gathered, I think, during this little shorter session. So well done. Good job. Can't wait to see what the theory formed around that is. It's complexity four, and the one after that will also be four. So it's gonna, might have some clues left over. Really enjoyed Dallas and Roderick communicating with Greeley of just like pretending that they understand him. Very good, very fun. I'm very excited to have Daniel back for the finale. I'm so excited and emotional about the finale session, about what's going to happen. I really am looking forward to how this is resolved, if anyone makes it out alive, how this all shakes out in epilogues that might come to be. Just in general, I mean, I'm very excited to just see how this story comes to a close. It's been 14 sessions so far, and the 15th is going to be the big one. So I'm very excited for that, you guys. Yeah. Any other stars or wishes from anyone?
I just want to know if like Mike Hester's Whateley has seen The Godfather or anything. Like, what are things that he's into? What does he do in his free time? You know, that's it.
All right. Any others?
I want to see if Mike is going to die or not because, like, I have one crown left.
I'm just excited for all of this. This finale is going to be absolutely killer.
I've been saving my crowns. I've been holding on to them tightly to my chest, just so if Chaotic tries to have a sacrifice, I could be like, no, I'm going to bump that up to a 12 plus so I can save Mike. No, I'm going to bump that up to a 12 plus. I want my additional benefit to be that Mike loves himself. No, I can't bump that up to a 12 plus that Mike goes to therapy.
Anything else?
God damn it. No. Yeah, that's
Then,
it.
great. Then, before we go.
Oh,
Bwomp, bwomp, bwomp. We hear a klaxon alarm. Bwomp, bwomp, bwomp. We see the cutout cliff face arch carving in the prism facility below ground, wired to machinery. The green glow has intensified. It's almost gone pale and blinding. It's like the green has gone so bright, it's almost like going white, just of how bright the light shining out of it is. There are readings off of the charts, computers beeping, this klaxon alarm going, a gathering of prism analysts and security specialists gathered in the observation chamber. At their head is the director. And there's a frenetic energy about the place as people are rushing to and for, checking readings, checking reports, running diagnostics. And all the while, the director's eyes are dead serious, set on that stone and the light coming through it as a security specialist next to her says, "Ma'am, I hate to push you, but we do need a response as to what news we're going to be making next. If this goes south," and she very tersely responds, "I know what will happen if this goes south. The best we can do is hope that they are not going to make it worse. But all of that said, perhaps there is something that can be done to at least stem the flow. Precautionary measure, one I hate to employ, but if ever there were a time, preventative measures are best put in place." And the man, security expert, looks around and says, "You mean, yes, yes, I do. Come on, let's open it." And we see them walking through a sub-level and a massive, highly secure, hermetically sealed vault-like door set into a wall. A couple of security people put in a key on each side at the same time, turn it in unison. The director enters a code on a keypad, scans her eyes into a little eye reader, and a slot opens in the center of the vault door. She takes off her Ankh medallion necklace and inserts one end of it like a key into the center and twists it. We hear the release of several hydraulics and just as locks slide out of place, rolling out of the way, revealing a darkened interior, a box-like small vault, much tinier than what such a large vault door should open to. And all that is inside this small chamber is a display stand and a glass case. And inside that glass case is a golden mask with a smiling sun on it.